All right, picture this for a moment.
Okay.
It's, say, a quiet Tuesday afternoon. A call comes into your local fire station.
Okay.
But it's not, you know, blaring sirens for a fire, not that urgent rush for a car accident.
Right.
Instead, it's a request to help someone, maybe an elderly resident, just get back on their feet after a fall. No injury.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds simple enough, right? A compassionate thing to do. Public service.
Yeah, seems straightforward.
But these incidents, these sort of minor things, when they happen again and again,
okay,
they can quietly, almost invisibly, pull vital firefighters and crucial equipment away from genuine emergencies.
I see where this is going.
Yeah, it's a challenge. A lot of fire protection districts have been grappling with this kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah.
It creates this silent but pretty significant strain on first responders.
And on community safety, I imagine.
Exactly. By extension, on community safety. Well, in Illinois, there's actually a new piece of legislation stepping right into this.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, we're talking about Public Act 10457. It's codified as 70 ILCS 7051NN.
Okay.
And this isn't just some minor tweak. It's a pretty significant law. It's going to redefine how certain non-emergency calls get handled.
Specifically these lift assist type calls.
Precisely. Those lift assist requests from facilities that provide care. And it's set to take effect January 1st, 2026.
So not immediate, but coming up.
Right. So our mission today on the deep dive is really to unpack this law, understand the issues it's trying to solve,
mm-hmm.
and explore its ripple effect, you know, on the fire districts, the assisted living and nursing homes, and ultimately on you, the taxpayer, and the whole community.
Sounds good. Let's get into it.
Let's dive in.
Oh.
Okay, so before we really dig into the implications of this new law, let's make sure we're all on the same page.
Good idea.
When we talk about these lift assist calls, what exactly are we defining them as, and what makes them this unique challenge for emergency services?
That's the foundational question, really, because the term itself, lift assist, it can sound pretty innocuous, right? Yeah. So a lift assist service in this specific context is when firefighters respond to an assisted living facility or maybe nursing home.
Okay.
To help a resident who has fallen but is uninjured. That's the key.
Uninjured. Got it.
They just need help getting up, maybe from the floor back into a chair or into bed. Simple physical assistance.
Okay.
But the critical distinction here, and it's one the law is very clear about, is that these are non-emergency calls.
Right. Not like someone needing an ambulance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This isn't about someone who needs transport to a hospital or an ER because they're hurt. This is purely about, well, physical help for someone who's otherwise stable.
Yeah.
Now, the challenge, like you said, it's subtle, but it's pretty profound.
Yeah.
While, you know, a single call is fine, it's a compassionate act. But the cumulative effect,
yeah,
when you get frequent, repeated requests for this non-emergency service that can tie up resources, disproportionately so.
How so? Like, what gets tied up?
Well, think about it. A fully equipped fire truck, right, with a crew of highly trained personnel, firefighters, maybe paramedics, they respond. That vehicle and that whole team, they're then unavailable for the genuine emergencies that need that immediate critical response.
Like a structure fire. Or a bad accident.
Exactly. A structure fire, major traffic accident, a life-threatening medical call. That crew is busy with the lift assist.
So it's like a quiet drain on their readiness.
That's a perfect way to put it. A quiet drain on readiness. And that's precisely why it became such a focus for lawmakers.
And that really brings us to the why, doesn't it? Why did lawmakers in Illinois feel they needed a specific law just for lift assists?
Yeah.
It feels so focused, you know, to make it a whole piece of legislation. How big was this problem?
Well, it really speaks to the growing nature of the issue.
Yeah.
And I think a recognition that the way things were just wasn't sustainable.
Okay.
The problem really escalated because some assisted living and nursing home facilities had, well, over time, come to rely pretty heavily on fire districts for these non-emergency services.
Like, how often are we talking?
We're not talking isolated incidents here. We're talking about a pattern. Repeated calls, sometimes multiple times a day or certainly multiple times a week, is often from the same facilities.
Wow, okay.
And this reliance, it created a significant strain. Just picture a fire station. They've got a finite number of trained people.
Right.
And specialized equipment.
Right, limited resources.
Exactly. So when a crew gets dispatched for a lift assist, that engine or truck, those firefighters, they are effectively offline for anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So if a real emergency happens at the same time, say a house fire where every second counts, or a medical crisis needing advanced life support,
yeah,
the response time for that critical incident could be delayed. because the primary crew is tied up.
And that's a direct risk to the community.
A direct tangible risk to community safety.
Well, absolutely.
So lawmakers, you know, they saw the data, they heard from fire chiefs across the state.
Yeah.
And they recognized this strain on vital public resources. And that led to passing Public Act 10457. The core intent, really, is to allow fire protection districts to recover the actual costs tied to providing these repeated non-emergency services.
So it's about making sure the districts can stay ready for the real emergencies.
Precisely. Maintain readiness for true emergencies.
Okay, so we get the why. Safeguarding emergency response capability, that makes sense.
Mm.
But for the facilities, and maybe for you listening, the practical question is, okay, how does this actually change things on the ground?
Right. The mechanics.
Yeah, let's break down the mechanics, especially when and how these fees might actually kick in.
Okay, yeah. This is where the rubber meets the road, so to speak. Yeah. The law introduces what people are calling the six-call rule.
A six-call rule. Okay, what's that?
Here's how it works. For any one specific assisted living or nursing home facility, the first six lift assist calls they make to their local fire district within a single calendar year, so January to December, those first six are still provided at absolutely no charge.
Okay, so there's still some leeway.
Exactly. It acknowledges that, you know, occasional things happen. Unavoidable situations arise. Fire districts are still a community resource for those legitimate, if non-emergent, needs. But the shift happens with call number seven.
The seventh call.
The seventh call. And any calls after that within that same calendar year. Starting then, the fire district may, it's permissive, not mandatory, may charge a reasonable fee.
Okay. And what's reasonable? How is that defined?
That's crucial. The law is very specific here. The fee cannot exceed the fire district's actual personnel and equipment costs for responding to that specific call.
Ah, okay. So it's tied directly to their costs.
Directly.
Yeah.
We're not talking about penalties or profit generation, nothing like that.
Right.
It's strictly about covering the direct, measurable expenses they incurred for that response.
Like what kind of expenses?
Things like the cost of the firefighter's time on scene, the fuel for the truck, maybe wear and tear on the equipment. Basically making sure the resources they deployed are accounted for.
So it shifts the cost for those repeat non-emergency calls away from the general taxpayer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Onto the facility making those repeated requests for what amounts to operational support.
That distinction, cost recovery, not profit, that seems really important.
It is.
So when they calculate those actual costs, what goes into that? Is it just the hourly wage or is it more complex?
That's a great question. It's definitely more comprehensive than just the hourly wage. That actual costs part is key.
Okay.
It typically includes the direct personnel costs. So yeah, salaries and benefits for the firefighters and paramedics on scene, but prorated for the duration of that specific call.
Right, just for that time.
For that time. But it also includes operational costs for the equipment.
Such as?
Things like fuel consumed, maintenance costs attributed to that run, maybe even a calculated slice of the vehicle's depreciation or the specialized gear used.
So it's really trying to capture the true cost of deploying those resources.
Exactly. It's basically an accounting of everything directly consumed or impacted by that specific response. The goal is to accurately reflect what public resources were spent on that non-emergency service, ensuring that the cost burden isn't unfairly carried by the whole community for what is essentially a facility's operational need.
What's fascinating here, I think, is how the law tries to balance things, like continuing support for these facilities, especially the residents,
right?
But also managing resources sustainably for emergency services. It feels like a pragmatic approach.
It does. It tries to thread that needle between support and sustainability.
But let's think bigger picture. Beyond the mechanics, the numbers, what does this new law really mean? For the facilities themselves, for their residents, and for you, the taxpayer, footing the bill for these services.
Yeah, this is where we get to the broader implications beyond just the money changing hands.
Right.
For the facilities, the assisted living places, the nursing homes, this law is a pretty powerful signal.
How so?
It means they absolutely must plan ahead for resident care. They can't just automatically rely on the fire department for routine lifts anymore.
So it's a push for them to be more self-sufficient.
Implicitly, yes, but a very clear push. The law encourages these facilities to handle routine non-emergency lifting needs themselves.
How would they do that?
Well, we're likely to see a much greater emphasis on training their own staff. You know, safe lifting practices.
Makes sense.
And investing in and actually using the assistive equipment they might already have, like Hoyer lists or other machines, within the facility.
Before they pick up the phone to call 911 for a non-emergency?
Exactly. Potentially even rethinking staffing models to make sure they have enough trained people available for these tasks.
So it's kind of reevaluating the division of labor, almost.
Yeah, you could say that. It's like a reevaluation of the social contract. It's effectively saying, look, routine care for your residents, that falls within your operational responsibilities, not the community's emergency burden.
That's a pretty significant shift in thinking, I wonder. Could it force facilities to maybe innovate a bit or rethink their internal care models?
Yes.
Like, could we see new third-party services pop up? You know, companies just doing non-emergency lifts. Or maybe facilities having to be more rigorous about staffing.
Those are very real possibilities, I think. The market often responds to things like this, to new demands and regulations.
Right.
So, yeah, we might see private companies emerge specializing in non-emergency patient handling. That could actually be a positive thing, right?
Yeah, potentially.
Providing a dedicated, maybe cost-effective solution.
Yeah.
And freeing up the fire department.
Right.
And yes, facilities will definitely need to look hard at their staffing and training. If they keep hitting that six-call limit, year after year, that signals an operational gap they need to fix, whether it's more training, different equipment, maybe more staff. The insight here isn't just about shifting costs.
What is it then?
It's that the very definition of a facility's core service responsibilities is being clarified here by law.
Okay, but what about the residents? Is there a risk here? Like, could there be unintended consequences? Well, could a facility maybe delay calling for help? Even in a borderline situation because they're worried about getting charged a fee, that's a concern that jumps out.
That's a very valid concern. And it's something, you know, the law and fire districts are very aware of.
Okay.
The critical emphasis always is on non-emergency situations. If there is any doubt about whether a resident is injured or if the situation might be an emergency, the expectation, the directive is always call 911 immediately, no hesitation.
So emergency calls are completely separate?
Completely separate. Fire departments will, without question, continue to respond to any call where there's a potential emergency or a risk to life.
Right.
This law is specifically tailored to those situations where it's already been determined it's a non-injury fall. That distinction is crucial.
So it's not meant to discourage legitimate calls for help?
Not at all. It's about managing resources for routine, non-emergency operational needs. Facilities still have that fundamental duty to ensure resident safety. And that absolutely includes getting help without delay for real emergencies.
Mm.
And, you know, for the fire districts themselves, their number one priority, it doesn't change. It's community safety.
Right.
For everyone.
Right.
This law just gives them a tool, a vital mechanism, really, to help maintain that priority.
By keeping resources available.
By ensuring firefighters and their equipment are actually available and ready for those genuine critical incidents, the ones that pose an immediate threat to life and property. And then finally, for you, the taxpayer, this law kind of brings a hidden cost out into the open.
How so?
Well, before this, taxpayers were essentially subsidizing a part of the operational costs of these private facilities, maybe without even realizing it.
Through the fire department response.
Exactly. This legislation helps ensure that the financial burden of these repeated non-emergency calls is shared more fairly. It prevents the entire cost of what amounts to a facility's routine operational needs from landing solely on the general public through their taxes.
So the insight isn't just cost shifting.
No, I think it's more profound. It forces a public conversation about what our emergency services are really for and who pays for what.
Right.
It lets us allocate those precious emergency resources to the situations where they are most critically needed.
That idea of a hidden subsidy being brought to light, that's a really powerful point. It really makes you think about how public services adapt or need to adapt to changing demands.
It does.
Could this Illinois law, do you think, serve as a model for other states? Are others facing similar issues?
That's a really good forward-looking question.
Yeah.
And I'd say absolutely it could.
Yeah.
Many states, many cities across the country, they're facing very similar pressures on their emergency services, especially, you know, with an aging population. That naturally increases demand for all sorts of assistance, including these lift assists.
Right. Demographics play a big role.
Huge role. And Illinois is often seen as, well, sometimes a bellwether for policy changes that other places then look at.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, every state has its own legal quirks, its own demographic landscape.
Sure.
But the core problem, the diversion of emergency resources for non-emergency routine care needs. That's pretty universal.
So this law offers a framework.
It offers a concrete framework, yeah.
Yeah.
Something other jurisdictions can examine, maybe adapt, potentially implement.
What would be the challenges elsewhere?
Well, the same balancing act, really. Meeting the needs of care facilities, absolutely ensuring patient safety doesn't get compromised.
Right.
And achieving that crucial sustainable resource management for the first responders. It's a tricky balance. I'd bet that fire chiefs and city managers in other states are watching how Public Act 10457 plays out in Illinois very, very closely.
This deep dive has really made us consider that intricate balance needed, doesn't it? Keeping community safe, keeping essential services ready.
It really highlights the complexities.
Mm-hmm. So just to recap for you, our listener, starting January 1st, 2026, there's a new Illinois law, Public Act 10457, that's 70 ILCS 70511N. It will allow fire protection districts to charge for non-emergency lift assists to assisted living and nursing home facilities, but only after the first 6 calls in a calendar year from one place.
And capped at actual costs.
And crucially, yeah, those fees are capped at the actual personnel and equipment costs for that specific response.
Right.
This deep dive, it really makes you consider those hidden costs, those resource demands on our essential services, and how even seemingly specific policy changes like this one can have a pretty profound impact on a community's ability to respond to true life-threatening emergencies.
That's true.
It's just a powerful reminder, isn't it, that every call counts. And understanding where our emergency resources are going, well, that's key to having a resilient and responsive community.
Absolutely.
Makes you think, maybe the next time you hear a siren, what true emergency was it responding to? And maybe what else might it have been called away from just before that?